Hello, everybody. Good. Small room. Let's keep it as interactive as we can. We're starting late, so I'm just going to dive right in. This is, here we go. It's going to work. Exception monitoring. And we're going to go through this. I'm busy like all of you. I try to stay interested in what I'm doing. Who cares what I about this. Okay, so in this session, we're going to talk about a sort of a special category of analytics, of instrumentation, termed application analytics, and how that feedback from production can affect application lifecycle management. We're going to cover, and we're going to spend most time on how to enable exception monitoring. So there's different types of analytics that we're going to, application analytics, and we're going to talk about those. But our focus specifically is capturing exceptions that occur in production in the wild. How do you filter, feed those back, and specifically the capabilities that are available to you with Visual Studio and TFS 2012 out of the box. And lastly, we're going to talk about what capabilities are not necessarily in the box, but are available to extend what additional pieces of capabilities are available to you, and how that can further influence your development practices and lifecycle management. So hopefully that's what you thought you were here to talk about. So let's just, first question. Everyone here at least played with Visual Studio 2012, perhaps? Anybody not seen 2012? A few? Okay. So some of this will be new to you, but if you open up Visual Studio 2012 and you pull down the tools menu, you're going to see something new. So have any of you heard of DocuSkater before? Most people, right? So in some sense, I would ask you, everything you know about DocuSkater, just forget about it. It's not gone. It's still there, but that's not at all what this talk is about. Right? It's not about obfuscation, not about protection. When you go down the tools menu where you used to see just DocuSkater, you now see preemptive DocuSkater and analytics. And we're going to go into all the capabilities. I'm going to demo the software for you. You're going to see exactly how to use it. But the thing I want to point out is that, you know, back in, I guess now it's a decade, in 2003, when we first started talking about this notion of obfuscation, twisting up DLLs and spitting them back out, people felt that was sort of invasive. They felt that was kind of a big step to take after you went through all this time to build it to then run it through, you know, and sort of turn it into spaghetti and spit it out again. So there's a lot of similar feelings about injecting instrumentation that feeds data back from production. Like, gee, I've just built this thing, and now you're going to inject live monitoring in production. And so the only point I want to make here is that in order for this to show up in 2012, this code goes through all the exact same regression tests, code audits, security reviews, performance profiling, internationalization, all the rings of fire that IntelliTrace or Visual Studio or TFS has to go through before it even shows up in a first customer ship type build. This is going through all of that too. So for better or for worse, this has been thoroughly vetted and tested. So I'm not asking you to take my word for it, but I'm just setting an expectation. So that's one thing, and that's in the box with 2012, every SKU other than Express. So if you have anything other than Express, you can see this for yourself. I submitted my slides a while back, and the feedback I got was I was jumping actually too quickly into detail, and to take a moment to explain up front why on earth you would want to do this. So what are the use cases behind instrumenting applications in production? So I'm going to quickly rattle through these, and then we're going to dive down into some more of the details. So the first and maybe the most obvious one is a rapid response to incidents when they occur in the field. Okay, what we're talking about is near real-time notification. So I know I look in the, I don't know this audience, but I'm looking at the badges, and there are people from banks and other, you know, organizations that understand what real-time means. This is not real-time, okay? But we're talking seconds, not minutes, hours, or days before data can come from the field and be delivered into a development organization. Okay, and often before the user even gets annoyed enough to call you, right? So number one. Number two, it can grab environmental factors. It's always been difficult to simulate production, okay? But now with cloud and distributed environments and web services and bring your own device to work and on and so on and so forth, it's virtually impossible to understand all of the environmental factors. Even the user can't tell you because they don't even understand where all their software is running, right? So you can grab all of that, and that becomes very critical in better identifying, diagnosing, and responding to incidents. Business context. This is actually, I think, really one of the most game-changing things here. Instead of just responding to how severe and how catastrophic a particular session may be, why not measure who it's occurring to? And if they're a very important person, perhaps service level to a client, right? Or if they're in the middle of doing something very important, so forget about who they are, right? If they're posting what they're going to bring to the potluck dinner party versus they're about to commit a customer record, right? Could be the exact same exception, right? But one, obviously, organizationally, you're going to want to respond to in a different fashion. So grabbing that context is one thing. And then defining the rules and the filters and the processes behind those when they're triggered is a huge opportunity for the first time made possible through this sort of DevOps notion. And then lastly, don't think of incidents as synonymous with exceptions. Okay, yes, we have unhandled exceptions, crash, got caught exceptions, thrown exceptions. Even those people often don't think of when they use the word exception. But an incident could be somebody has gone through four onerous steps to create a customer record. So it takes them a long time. And on that fifth step, they abandon the activity. And this starts to happen a lot. Right, you start to see it happening over. So there's no crash, there's no nothing, right? What's the most expensive defect? Design, right? So it could be that you forgot to tell them that they need, the tax ID of the customer organization. So they go through all that work, and the last minute say, okay, now enter their tax ID, and they're like, I don't have it, right? So how would you ever know that necessarily, right? How do you measure how much it's costing you? So identifying security issues and unusual behavior, errors in design, that's sort of the fourth category. So if you combine all these together, it's a huge opportunity. So that's what we're going to be focusing on. How do you actually accomplish these things? Okay, so anyone who has seen any presentation on ALM from Microsoft in the last 12 months probably recognizes, how do I get over there? There we go. This little thing here. So we're just going to, this is, Mike, I think it's a very elegant, clean way to represent the balance and the connection between development and operations. Okay, so application analytics, of which exception monitoring is a subset, consists first, of course, of telemetry. What is it that you're grabbing? And it's runtime data, right? So it's user usage of the applications, their behavior. I've already talked about the notion of exceptions as not just being unhandled exceptions, and we talked about custom data, but also the runtime stack, right? Are they on a phone? Which phone? How much memory do they have on their laptop? What's their screen resolution? How much memory do they have? I mean, if you think about your, virtual labs and test plans, if you've made the wrong assumption about the minimum amount of memory that your users will have, you could come out smelling like a rose, right? You can come out, you're testing awesome, right? Because you're not testing what the users are doing, right? So, and some of that you can't get from interviews or typical methods. So you want to get all that. The architecture, the key here is that this is not an enterprise-centric solution. Can it run inside an enterprise? Of course it can. But can it run across a partner network? Yes, it can. Can it run on an individual device or a consumer-facing application? Yes, it can. Okay, so that distinguishes it significantly. Okay, I'm just noticing it's clipping stuff off. I can't be bothered. And then deployment. If this is going into domains, devices, and networks that you don't own, you can't ask them to install something extra. You can't ask them to turn on something extra. You can't have agents sitting in the background running. You probably can't even give them additional files beyond what they've accepted. So capturing, you know, ensuring the deployment is exactly as it was is another critical piece. So those are sort of the distinguishing factors of all application analytics, and certainly the exception monitoring, which we're about to dive into. Now, how do you get your app to behave that way? The good news is there's no programming required. There's many times where a little programming adds a lot, but it's not required. Okay, and we do that through injection. And if we're talking about .NET or Java, you can do injection. You don't do it for JavaScript or native code, obviously. And then for those flavors, you have APIs. And that's not to say you don't also want APIs for managed code sometimes, because you can get a lot more control, and we'll talk about that, time allowing. And then the other point is it's not hard, those of you that are developers, to post some data, okay? But to do it in a secure fashion, a scalable fashion, a resilient fashion, to account for opt-in and privacy issues, to deal with, you know, issues when the network goes down and then it comes back up, and, you know, storing that and sending it up later, dealing with opt-in and opt-out issues and protocols. So like many things, like some of you might remember, maybe in the history books, people actually used to write their own data, persistent data stores, right? Because, you know, there was none really around, right? Now, I mean, and writing data to a disk and bringing it back is trivial, right? Writing a database is rocket science, right? So as you start thinking about what it means to instrument an app that can handle all of these scenarios, that's additional capabilities that you have to find in an applications analytics. And because we started a little late, I'm going to not take you through each of these individual bullets, but the sort of the benefits the benefits that come out of all, of having this data inside your development process, all the different phases, really fall into two groups, I would say. One is helping you to build better. So do things smarter, faster, more efficiently, allocate your resources. And the other side is to build better stuff, right? So yes, it's awesome if you become more efficient, but you also hope that what you're building is more impactful, more valuable, provides better user experience. And again, if we have time or Q&A or afterwards, we can go through anecdotes and all that. But I want to get to this software as quickly as I can here. So that's the high-level application analytics. I'm about to drop into the demo. I want to just give you a quick summary of what you get inside Visual Studio and TFS, show you a quick architecture slide, and then we're going to drop down. Okay, so the goal of preemptive analytics for TFS, CE means Community Edition, it's not the mobile platform, is focused on connecting development to operations. That's it. There's many other things you can do with analytics, but this is the scope. Okay, what happens is it has a rules engine. I'm not going to read through these bullets. So basically, it streams this data, right, to an endpoint. And there are rules that decide, is this interesting or not interesting? And we'll talk about how you can define those rules. And if it determines, because of these rules, that something is interesting, it's an incident, the response is an automatic creation of a work item inside TFS with appropriate artifacts and notifications and severity. Right? So this is a key distinction with many other types of analytics that require somebody to be looking at something, to be waiting for a line to cross another line, and then hoping that person notices, is empowered, has the time to do something about it. What you're saying here is, I know that if something happens with a certain pattern, I don't need to ask anybody. I don't need judgment. I want a work item created. I want it put in the backlog with all my other work. It's not like it's the most important thing in the world, but I want automatically for it to be flowed into the balance of my work, and that's the goal of PA for TFS. I'm going to say a few syllables, maybe get me 30 seconds back. Okay, so the typical architecture. Okay, I've already talked about this notion of instrumenting across layers and architectures and domains. That's all that's meant to say. There's three components that you get with the community edition of PA for TFS. The first is an endpoint. And the endpoint is a very simple service based on SQL Server, and it's just basically listening. And you can put it pretty much anywhere you want. We have it running in Azure VMs. You can put it in a DMZ. You can put it right in the exact same spot as all the other stuff if you'd like. But if you're deploying software outside of your firewall, you're going to want it somewhere public-facing, obviously. That's all it does, is listen and store. It doesn't do anything. Then there's another service and this sits inside your environment, and it polls this, and this is where all the rules will sit. This is where all the mappings between applications and projects and teams go on. And this is what applies those rules to the data it's polling. And when those rules are fired, it will back and forth create the work item or update a work item if one already exists based on that event. One of the key things you're going to see, or key things, one of the things you should take notice of is that not only will it create a work item, but if you can keep it alive, you can keep it listening to what's happening in production. So in the demo, you're going to see that it creates a, in one scenario, it'll create a work item, but things keep happening and things are changing in the field, and that results in a change in the severity of that work item, as well as continuously updating relevant data, right? So it doesn't, you don't lose connection, it's bi-directional. And then we provide some reports and keep out of the box. Again, this basic level of functionality I just described, in the box, 2012. Okay? So the demo I'm gonna do, have anybody here used Hands-On Labs, Brian Keller's VM? A lot of nods. So two quick points. Everything I'm gonna show you is an extension off of that. And the second point I want to make is at the end I have a link, or you have my email, or see us, we have a little a table up front. I'll give you, we have it packaged up, all of the resources, extensions, and scripts you need to reproduce everything I'm going to show you inside your copy of the VM. So I could have shown you like live apps and other people's apps, all very impressive and completely out of reach. What we're going to focus on is stuff, I'm going to show you how it works, and if you don't believe me, set it up yourself on Brian's VM and step through it and use it as a tool. So, and we're good. Okay, that's part two. Skip that part. Now let's see how this works. So far, so good. It's cutting off the screen. All right, so I'm going to play around a little with this to make it visible. Okay, so here's an app. Anybody who's used Brian's VM, you might recognize the Fabricam thing. What we did was we made a tiny little modification to it. For those of you that have stepped through this, this is often a lead-in to IntelliTrace, right? So this is still a lead-in to IntelliTrace, but we're going to show you how it fits in with that. So this app is ASP.NET. It's a web app. Let me first bring it up. Inside, not there. Let me first. It's because it's not. Let me do view full screen. Let's see if that helps a little. And then we're going to go here. And let me first. Show you the app. So the only thing special that we did on this app is we created a little data dictionary, because it's not enough just to get the stack trace sent back. We actually want to know who's having the problem so that we can proactively call them. And again, because I'm going to be a little pressed for time, the punchline for that, this is all CE. I'm going to make it very clear if I show you anything that's not in the box, okay? The point here is that you want to proactively contact people that are having issues before they get so annoyed that they call you. That's number one. But number two, if in fact you find you really do need that deep dive capability that, say, an IntelliTrace in production might offer you, you want to know who to give it to, when they're most likely to have the problem, right? You don't want to be distributing that widely. So let's go into, so this is Dofuscator CE. This is the community edition of Dofuscator, right? And for those of you that have ever used it, you just point it at, you know, the compiled software that you want to instrument. We're going to skip all the protection stuff. We just go right to analytics. See if I can open this up. And you just need to add 5 attributes. Okay, and the way you add things, you just right click, you say add attribute. It gives you choices based on where you are as to what's appropriate. I've sped this up. The first thing you do is you identify your app. Fighting my form factor here. The only thing you have to give it is a GUID. We could actually, if you don't override it, we'll pull from your project the name and the version number as well from your project. We can generate one for you. You can reuse one. It's not required. that you use a particular GUID, and you want to identify your organization. And it's that pairing, the organization and the GUID, that you're going to use later to connect back to teams and to projects and to work items. The only other things you need to do is you need to identify the entry point to your app, which includes telling it where you want to send the data, it's a URL. The exit point of your app, and I took all defaults here, there's nothing to do, that just tells us to shut down the threads, flush the cache, you know, and this all runs in a low priority thread inside your process. And then the last thing we're going to do is we're going to add an exception tracking attribute, and it's an unhandled, and there is one thing special we're doing here. Remember that I said we want to capture who is using this, right, and the error that they had. So you can pass this by saying, hey, whenever this exception occurs, run this method. Okay, and that was the method I very briefly showed you. And that populates the custom data. Okay, and this can be absolutely anything. So it's not required, but this is custom data. So let's go back to our application. Let me go to this one. I just have to make sure it wakes up. Wouldn't you know, when you want something to crash, it won't crash? Is that weird or what? There we go. Okay, probably happened a bunch of times. So I threw the error. Who's logged in? Drew, there's Drew Robbins. He gets annoyed. He doesn't even tell you about it, right? So now let's go back. Go to the all incidents page. So this exception, this work item already existed. I'm just going to sort of clear the screen. What it will tell you is the type of exception, how many people were affected by it, and how many times it occurred. And I'm just going to refresh this. And there you see, I guess I hit it a number of times. I triggered it 20 times. And you'll see if I double click on it, it tells me things like, should I accept new data? Is it live? I can assign it. You know, it's a full-blown, first-class work item. Gives me the exception, right? And if I wanted to, I could sort of jump to this and say, let's try to debug it. But let's first look at the incident details. And you see here again, fighting my form factor here. But you'll see it's telling me who the person is, what the error. It's telling me what memory was, you know, what was in memory at the time. And so now I can proactively reach out to people with knowledge. And I had that stack trace, by the way. And if I went to that code, right, where is it? There it is. If I go to that code, and this is where it got the null pointer, okay? Well, this is not in debug mode. I don't know exactly where this occurred. But now I know enough. So maybe I could debug it right now and I'm done. But if this was really mysterious, well, now I know at least who, when, and how to reach out and maybe give them a debug version or perhaps deploy IntelliTrace in production. Okay? So that's full stop what you can do with CE. Okay? Let me now switch context as quickly as I can. Yes. I'm going to open a different solution. There we go. And let me close that. So here's a similar app running against the same data. This is a WPF app, just to mix it up. But here's something a little different. And let me go back, actually, into open up Preemptive Analytics. So this is empty. Okay, so we have none. So this is now, so now the person's gotten the ticket, they're gonna work on it, and they're gonna say, I need to see Greg's record. Okay? So just like before, actually I skipped over one part, but I'll do it here as well. So the one thing I skipped, even in the earlier one, was how do you connect the executable back to TFS. And this is the same, whether it's, so what I'm gonna show you now works for CE just the way it would for this app, is you open up the configure option, right here, right? You enter in the GRID and the org ID. So now you're saying, this is what I want to subscribe to, right? And then you can start to define rules. And in CE, all you would do is you would say, you know, I want to look at the exception set, which is the collection of categories of exceptions you're interested in. And that's defined here. And this is a wide net, just send me everything. But I could be very specific. Give me only credential exceptions. Give me custom exceptions that you only throw inside your app. Network, you know, you name it. What I'm saying in my rule is look at that data. And the rule says anytime it's going to be counting, and this is a more advanced rule, which I'm about to show you, but the CE rule just says a number of unique exceptions over a period of time. So I'm just saying, hey, if something, you know, something happens enough times or to enough people, let me know. And if that should happen, create this work item, type incident. And that's it. It's all connected. So literally, if this takes you more than a half hour to configure, you know, something is wrong or doc isn't right. Something's not right, okay, because it really is that simple. In this case, let me go back now, and I'll open this up later. Let me refresh. So now I have the same thing, you know, it fired an exception. I'm going to get the same type of information, okay, same custom detail, except now I'm able to grab custom data. So we've now moved beyond Community Edition. I now want to provide additional context behind who it was and comment information. And you'll see it says continually updated. So again, this is, in this case, it's a CSV file. And what I've chosen to grab here is the customer name they were working on and who the salesperson was that had the problem. So I can start to look at a number of business issues. And so what's kind of interesting about this, if I go back here and sort of recreate what I did before, would just say, if this is really important and I'm really trying to get to Greg, you know, I'm just about to call him, so I really need it, I hit it 4 or 5 times. Go back to all incident, hit refresh, give it a second. It's going to go. It's only because I'm hitting it that it's taking a long time. I'm going to throw a different exception, and then all of them will probably show up. One more thing I want to show is I'm going to be doing it based on volume. Yeah, I can't give up. There we go. So you see it went to 5, okay? So it happened 5 times, but you also notice it changed to critical. So before it was medium, now it's critical. Because if somebody is banging their head against the wall, that's in a sales context, that should achieve different notification. And further, when it hits critical, it creates it, and I know it's a funny time, but that is the time, right? When it is critical, it actually generates an email and notifies the right person, right? And then there's a link to the web client version of all of this, and you can see all that same data, right? So again, I'm skipping over some of the stuff just to make sure I stay on track. So let me go back to this. What I can also do, I'm going to log out. And so that was based on activity. Now I'm going to log in, and I'm going to based on who I am, who's doing the work, and maybe who the customer is, a more important customer. And now I've only thrown it once, right? So I'm going to go back. Hit refresh. And while it's doing that, it's going to take a second for whatever reason. Let me open up a file. So I want to show you the rule. That's where we're going to end up. So we're going to get to that in a minute. All incidents. Refresh. There it is. Okay, so you see I only threw it once. But this time, because of who I was and what I was doing, I had a totally different organizational response. So the point here is that you don't just need to schedule and organize and assign work based on what a narrowed view of what an incident or an exception is. You can factor in all of this information as it relates to your business. So we have one real-world scenario that we're working on where it's an IT app. I won't say who it is. It's an IT app, and when an exception occurs, there's actually analysis that's done that says, are they working on a high priority ticket? So it doesn't even matter what the exception is. If they're in the middle of resolving a high priority ticket, that's a high severity work item. And if they're just doing normal day-to-day work, there's a different set of criterion that applies. And the key here, I want to just point this out. So this, let me go back to configure. When you're doing this definition, just as I showed you before, you can click on the rule, and error count over time is what you get in CE, in Community Edition, but you can write your own. We've documented this extensibility point. So you can develop your own C-sharp-based rules, okay? So for example, if it's a very important customer, how would you know that? You don't know that on the client. That would be a lookup that you would do on the server side, maybe to your CRM system, right? So you can, on the client side, as I mentioned in the IT scenario, say, are they working on something important? And then when the data shows up, you can say, are they important? And all of that can be combined with your own rules. And all of this happens after you deploy, right? You don't need to know all this stuff as you're building and instrumenting and deploying your software. You can evolve these rules, right? And this particular rule, just to prove that it is extensible and all that, was actually written by a partner of ours, InCycle. I don't know if anyone from InCycle's in the room. No? Oh, my feelings are hurt. Anyway, here's a question. That's right. So we're going to, so what Dafuscator does, when I did that configuration, I jumped too quickly through it, but what you do is you actually point it at the DLL or ZAP file or BAML or whatever, and we consume that, inject it, and that can be part of just your automated build in the commercial one. In the CE, it's a manual process. Absolutely. No. You do it as part of your build process. So you have a continuous build.
The machine or the client in the other case has to have network access to your TFS?
Well, no, not to the TFS. I'll jump back to the architecture slide. If you recall, there was the two-tier, though. So they need access to a public-facing URL that collects the data, and then where your TFS server lies in our aggregator, which is that second piece, that's inside. It pulls that external thing. So there's DMZ. It's quite safe. I mean, it's a classic. Yeah, this all comes, but that is in Community Edition. I just want to be very clear. That layout is not a commercial, not an extra. You get that if you have TFS and Visual Studio. I'm not going to take you through the instrumentation again, other than to show you. How we got that extra, when I go back to the exception tracking attribute, so this is the commercial example, you'll notice that it's looking at thrown exception. It's on a single method instead of top level, unhandled. And you'll notice that it can grab, you can do all sorts of custom data at this, you know, beyond just the contact and comment information. You can grab whole data dictionaries. And we have some clients actually send up machine configuration files, like, you know, they're device manufacturers, and they actually want to know, like, how the machine is configured. So trust is just like a blob, right? But we pass it through. So it doesn't have to be a string. You can send it up, you know, you can send up any data you want and consume it how you'd like. But again, it's exactly the same, right? Other than that, let's see, I just want to be mindful of the time here. So there's the code, right? So I just want to point out that we give you all the namespaces and libraries. We've documented this extensibility. And so you'll see what's happening here is they're able to look at the exception count. And if it's over the threshold value that's set in the rule, you know, then it creates the work item, right? There's a calculation that says, hey, this could be a call to your CRM system. This is hardwired, obviously. You know, is this a VIP? If it is, right away, right? Turn it to critical. And then it starts to look at the counts. And if the counts, the number of occurrences starts to increment, it will update the work item instead of create a new work item. So all of those interfaces, all that data is exposed for you. So we really, you know, and as I say, this particular one was written by a partner, so it could be written by anyone. I think I'm going to stop on the demo just for now. Let me go back. Let's see if this is going to work. Okay. So I sort of combined two demos into one, right? And what often happens, and again, both of these, I want to be very clear, if you want to take the custom method and the extensions and you know that WPF app and all of that stuff, we're going to give you all the scripts and artifacts that you need. So if you think this was sleight of hand or something, we'll give you all the software, you know, try it out for yourself. This is kind of a lot of tiny text to go through in our remaining 15 minutes, and I want to leave room for questions. I just want to say that this is a resource you're going to get, which compares exactly what you get in the community edition, exactly where you would need extensions. This is a lot of detail. It has to do with, you know, multiple platforms and security, encryption, and offline caching. There's all sorts of stuff. But maybe a better way, just at a quick broad brush, is to go back to that first slide I showed where I talked about what were the scenarios. Why would you ever want to do this? So and this is really behind the design. So our goal and Microsoft's goal together in putting out the community edition inside 2012 was not to give a half a solution. Our goal was to give a complete solution for a finite, discrete, well-defined scenario. So if you want shorter mean time to repair of defects on .NET apps, right, it's all there in 2012. If some of these other scenarios are of value and of interest, then you need to consider some of the extensions. Okay, so, and again, I want to make sure we have time for questions, so I'm going to go a little farther. So just to summarize, application analytics, there's a even a more detailed chart, which I'd be happy to go through, that kind of distinguishes between web analytics, network monitoring, debugging, performance monitoring, and application analytics. There's fundamental differences in the requirements and therefore in the features and the architectures. Okay, if you believe in feedback-driven development, it's kind of crazy to have actually no actual feedback that's unfettered that can be fed directly back to you that you can then filter in sort of a heuristic or automated fashion. Okay, so that's point number one. Point number two, as I mentioned, shortening mean time to repair, grabbing unhandled exceptions, delivering them inside your TFS environment intelligently is in 2012. And it's not just an enterprise solution or a consumer solution. It'll span all of your deployment and architecture strategies. One thing I didn't really call out, I also want to point out that this instrumentation does not require a presentation layer. So if you want to instrument something running in a cloud that never touches, you know, a human touch or I/O or anything, that's perfectly okay. It's not dependent on clicks or page views or anything like that. Lastly, of course, there are a variety of extensions that are available if you want to take advantage of some of these more advanced capabilities. Before I open it up to Q&A, and maybe we'll go back into software if people want to see more software, but here's some stuff. So MSDN Library, there's a sort of a longer article on features and what is application analytics and how does it fit into the patterns and practices and pillars around 2012 and modern development. There's a nice article by this guy, Chris Kinsman, who's sitting here. So that's a good sort of quick summary. So one thing we made available, so in the box, you get .NET support. But through a promotion with Visual Studio Marketing, we've also made available the Java API for free that works inside CE. So anybody here doing Android development? Couple. Okay, Java development generically? Okay, so, well, not a lot, okay. But if you are, or some of your peers back home are, they can use the API with the functionality you have inside 2012 TFS in Visual Studio. Again, you don't need to work with us. Hands-on lab, so I didn't So download his latest lab. There actually is, in this link, so you're going to get these slides. This link is actually to the specific hands-on lab where he shows you how to install, configure, and set up that first app I sort of stepped you through. Okay, so it's already baked in. But if you want the custom data and some of that other stuff, or that second app with the custom rules, you're going to want the extra pieces. And it's fairly voluminous, so it's not going to be on the jump drive. But no criterion. There's no hurdle to follow. Just let me know or stop by our booth, and we'll take your contact information. We'll give you all the scripts and, of course, our little website. Questions? A couple. Yes, sir.
So I have a scenario. I'm wondering if you could handle this. I've got like a Windows service that runs unattended, like you said, mm-hmm. user UI. And it's doing integration from our app to another app.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this other ETL job that runs every night, let's say 7 o'clock at night. And when that thing runs, they need to fix it, put locks on the database, and we get timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Once in a while, the database, the DBAs are getting dinner or something like that, and there's deadlocks.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get an exception for an hour, I don't care. But if I get it for 2 hours in a row, if I get an hour every night, I don't care.
Right.
But just a pure counter, I don't care about it. But if that goes on for more than an hour in one, session,
right. Absolutely. So that data shows up inside, or can easily show up inside the envelopes that we send. And just as in the scenario I showed you, it said, tell me how many, who was the user, and then I look it up. You could actually even make it more generic to say, what was the time, what was the average time, and then even do a lookup to say, and what is my threshold today? Am I okay with, and would not do the custom rule. No. So what you would need, if you really wanted to pinch your pennies, you would probably, I would just suggest, it won't address exactly what you're saying, but you would have to make a guesstimate of when it's going too long, how many more of those do you tend to get, and then just set the threshold that high. So it's imperfect. But again, the goal is you might get it, look at it, and say, no, that was okay. And then you close the work item. It's straightforward. But the key is, even if you did the count, or in another scenario, say your count was 1,000, say it was 10,000. The key is, it's still one work item.
Right.
You're never going to, this is one of the major things, is that it's filtered. Right, and you can do all that, but the idea is that you don't get flooded, right? The goal here is not to make development interrupt driven or to, hit them with a ton of stuff. You set the thresholds, the gain, if you will, and what you want to pass through. So it's entirely up to you. Yes, sir.
I guess that feeds into another question. Does that mean you initially fire off something, it's take a look at, it's moderate priority or such, but if I get 10 more, take the same ticket and kick its priority?
Exactly.
Okay.
You can do that. That's what I showed you, yeah. And so we give you that code to show you exactly how it's done as well. Yeah, if it's closed, it would come back, and the reason you would do that maybe is if you think it's fixed,
right?
And you can, and by the way, in the rule you can specify again the GUID and the version. So in other words, you might continue to get exceptions, on an older version, and you might just say, I don't want to hear about that one anymore. But if I get it in a new version, then let me know right away, because obviously I didn't fix it the way I thought I did. Right. And that's straightforward. That's not a custom thing. That's just the logic. Yep.
My understanding is that you're attaching some kind of comp to the original comp, right?
Injecting, yes.
Yes, injected. This will affect the speed of the original application.
So it's my favorite question. I always joke, is our CTO Bill is here. So if you don't believe anything, first of all, if you see him squirm, I've not said something correctly. So far, he's looking very relaxed. He always says, and he says more than this, but the joke is I always say, it depends. And I say, he says that, and I say, well, that's not very satisfying. Even though it's true, it's not very satisfying. So the good news is we didn't come to analytics as an analytics company. We came to it as an optimization and hardening company, right? So our mindset is about shrinking, hardening, and doing all that. The general rule of thumb I would suggest is that if there's any I/O in your app, up, down, or sideways, so network stuff, disk stuff, screen stuff, this will be negligible, okay, including mobile apps. Okay, I would not use this inside a physics engine, inside a game. I would not use this in a real-time trading thing, as a real a simulator of any type. I mean, no, okay? But in general, it should be negligible. We do fire and forget. We have queues. We stack things up. So unlike a debugger, whose job it is, rightfully so, is to watch your app die, right? Our logic, and give you the forensics, right? Our logic says if resources become tight, if things are, you know, the system is looking iffy, we start throwing away envelopes. We will shut down, right? So our goal is to minimize in any way we can. Now, having said that, you probably want to test it. In other than some ill-advised instrumentation, like a network driver, a few other things that we've seen, as of yet, nobody has yet had an issue with that. Another question? Yes?
Could you shed some light on your experience when you go to a customer and you say, well, we have this instrumentation in place, well, messages go out from the company and towards you, and it depends if you use the CE edition or the professional version, in what detail data of the client flows out?
Right. So that's an excellent question, and as I think about it, it's one of the, I shut it all down. We have built in both the free version, CE version, and commercial, has built in an opt-in, opt-out setting. And you can point us at a method, a property, an attribute, you can do a lookup, and you tell us, and you set the policy, have they opted in? Or must they opt in? Have they opted out? I mean, you just, because again, if it's an internally deployed app, no expectation of privacy, at least so far. That's the rule. But if you're in California versus France, you know, versus Japan, the rules are totally different. Or if you're in pharmaceutical, financial, or you're selling something that children may use. Again, totally different rules, right? So we don't get into that business. What we do get into the business of is allowing you at any point, well, at the beginning of any session, or to say, should we turn on? And if you set that, we only accept opt-in, meaning if somebody gives us anything other than true, we assume it's opt-out. And therefore, the threads don't start, nothing gets queued, I mean, nothing happens at all. So it's not like the data could be mishandled. There is no data. So that's the first thing, is we give you a mechanism to do opt-in, opt-out. So you need to have a good policy, you need to communicate, I mean, we're not lawyers or anything like that, but nothing changes. If you're gonna collect data, you need to do it the way you need to do it. And what we can do, though, is enforce whatever that policy is. Conceivably, and this is certainly not envisioned with CE, but conceivably, you could put that initial endpoint, let me go back to here, whoops, I was in the right spot. If you conceivably, here we go, you could put this inside a customer facility. So they could actually look at it and decide if they want to turn it on or off. This is definitely a customization. That's not the install practice. I mean, but architecturally, this, you know, these two things just have to talk over HTTP protocol. And so it's up to you. Question? Any others? And I have 3 more minutes. Yes. Yeah, so deploying, so there's what do you mean by deploy? I'm just kidding. So it actually does matter. So if we're talking about like this piece, if you can see that, this we've just recently verified for sure, I mean, I would have said yes, but I had the recent experience of witnessing it. Will certainly run in an Azure VM, no problem. If you're talking about deploying a service into Azure, there's no reason the whole manufacturing of the package and how it's deployed, like that, there's probably a little bit of teeny bit of customization that you're gonna have to do to make sure that we're injecting at the right point. Like you called Obfuscator at the right point. Certainly with Java API, but even with .NET, there will be an API shortly. Then the whole, there's programming required at that point, but obviously the whole assembly line doesn't matter at that point. But sending the data out, there's no problem. So just to be clear, as long as your app has clearance, you might want to think about sending data out of Azure, of what you send. Only, and if you're only doing exceptions, I can't imagine it's an issue, or you have a very buggy program. But if, say, you were doing all features and general usage information, there's probably some charges that might come with that as you start to use a lot of bandwidth, potentially. Exactly right. Yes, sir. Like?
Alma.
I don't know what Alma is.
Alma is, you can install with NuGet, install package.
Okay.
It's an ASP.NET application. And all the sections are captured and set up with Log4Net or another
okay, so again, I'm not familiar with that, but just hearing the way you described it, first of all, this is not, so let's start on the client side. This will run, as I mentioned, on an Android phone, in Silverlight, Windows phone, somebody else's network that you don't have any access to or control to, and it will deal with all the network and opt-in and all of that side. On the collection side, again, I don't know, but you didn't mention a rules engine that will then interpret all of this and protect developers from getting hit by, you know, death by a thousand cuts, right? If you have heavy usage, you might get the same exception many, many times, right, over a long period of time. So you would never see any of that in our scenario because of the rules piece. And then I have to imagine that they don't create the reports and the work items and all that other stuff for you automatically. So that would just, again, if there's an Alma expert out there, feel free to throw something at me if I got that wrong. But I didn't hear you talk about those distinctions. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
I don't want to hog the room. A little bit back on Azure, does any of this tie at all with Azure Diagnostics or play with that, or is it just entirely separate?
No, right now it's entirely separate. Again, one of the basic design principles, this data is your data, obviously ownership, but you also have access to it in a very granular way. So all of this, respectively, is relatively new, as much as it may have all been tested. So that kind of added connector hasn't been done yet, but you don't need to wait. I mean, if it's important, I guess we'll do it, just like every developer would tell you, we'll do what people want. But if it was important to you and you didn't want to wait, that's certainly something. There's no reason that you couldn't do it. I'm not sure I understand the question. You can.
If I had something that I couldn't tie into this for some reason, but I could say catch something on my own.
Oh yeah, you can. Well yeah, you can throw your own exception and then put the exception feature on that thing that throws it. You raise your own. You could. I mean, that's one way to do it. I do want to point out we have a JavaScript API. We have a C++ API. The only thing in terms of mobile, we cover all but one really important one, which is iOS right now, but that's coming. It's going to be an API. It's not going to be injection. So
what's interesting that it's doing that over network.
Yeah, you can actually bundle. Yeah, so you'll get the runtime environment, and then you can, depending on how you want to deploy, you can take all that, the JavaScript logic, and you can put it in your app if you want, which you need to do. Say, and we've by the way, we've tested this on iPhone, so this actually works. So you can do, and by the way, I'm talking about exceptions because I want to focus, the title is exception monitoring. There could be another session about feature session, user behavior, and pattern monitoring, which, performance, yes. Yeah. So you can, yes. But it's not, I want to be clear, this is not a profiler. So yes, you can say how much time do I spend in a method or a feature or a piece of logic. But don't think like milliseconds. Don't think about profiling and memory management. Because it's not going to write. It's not going to work. You're going to pay a penalty that we don't think anyone wants to pay. Last, I'm not late yet, but one more question or we can call it a day. Thank you guys so much for staying. I really appreciate it.